Hey, Raymond here from the Beginner Photography Podcast, and welcome back to another Community Spotlight interview. So as you know, in 2021, one thing I really want to make a focus on is deepening the connection that we have within the community, within the Beginner Photography Podcast. It is, I still believe, one of the most helpful and one of the safest places on the internet for new photographers. And it's fun to kind of, you know, figure out who it is that we're hanging out with online, somebody, you know, behind just the name on Facebook. So that's what this is. This is what the Community Spotlight is. I, you know, once a month, I find somebody in the group and we talk about photography. I want to learn why they got into photography, you know, and kind of what the future holds. And these are going to be the photographers who are where you're at right now. They're not professional photographers. There's still a lot of things that they're trying to learn within photography, but they've been doing it long enough to where they kind of are starting to feel their groove and starting to make movement in the direction that they want to. So the whole point of these conversations, again, figuring out who it is that we're hanging out with online, putting voices to names with the people who we hang out with in the Beginner Photography Podcast community, and hopefully offer a little bit of insight. If they're maybe a little bit further than you are in their journey, you can get something from this conversation from them and why it is that they shoot what they shoot and how they see the world. So today we are talking with Sir Quincy Worthington of Indiana, who, you know, hasn't been shooting for very long, just, you know, 2 years or so. And I think in this interview, there's going to be a lot that gets broken down and it goes deeper than I was expecting it to. And it's a really fun conversation. So I know that you're going to enjoy it as well. Quincy's a very active member within the Facebook community, always willing to help, always willing to give some insights. And knows, you know, as well that it is also a very safe place for new photographers just looking to, you know, share some information or share their photos and get a little bit of information, because we're all trying to get just a little bit further in our photography journey than we were yesterday. You know what I mean? So, you know, feel free to listen to this episode, enjoy it, and then be sure to check out the show notes of this episode to check out some of Quincy's work, including what you are going to hear about, the rhinoceros photo that kicked it all off for Quincy, that he took on his cell phone and started him on this path of photography. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into this interview with Quincy Worthington. Quincy, thank you so much for being here today. You know, before we get started, why don't you just tell me who you are and where you're from and what it is that you do?
Okay. Thanks for having me. That's like my least favorite question. Let's see.
That's why I ask it first. We get it out of the way.
I am originally from Erie, Pennsylvania. I lived there growing up pretty much. And then I went to undergraduate in Vermont, did graduate school in Virginia, where I lived for quite a while. And then we moved to Ohio for 2-3 years. And now we've lived in Northwest Indiana, just outside of Chicago, for the past, well, coming up on 7 years here in June. And actually, this has been the longest I've lived anywhere my adult life. So I'm starting to feel like I'm from here now, even though I'm not really. My day job is I am a Presbyterian minister of a church of about 500 up here.
So you just get up and you start talking in front of like 500 people at a time, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, the total membership's 500. It's hard to gauge now after the past year, like how many people are. But yeah, I mean, we were pulling in consistently 200 to 250 people a Sunday.
Wow.
Maybe 300 on a weekend because we started a Saturday service. So yeah, and I still get really confused that people show up to hear me talk. So.
I feel the exact same way. You're in the same boat. The fact that, you know, the numbers for downloads continues to grow and more people come into the Facebook community just kind of boggles my mind. So I absolutely get it. You're like, you know, what are you doing here? So when it comes to photography, tell me about how you got started. Like, when did you first pick up that camera?
Oh, okay. I'd always liked photography as a kid. My grandfather was took pictures of everything on Kodachrome slides. Nice. And so, like, when he retired, he and my grandma traveled all around the world, and he would always give these slideshow presentations and things like that. I was given disposable cameras and point-and-shoot cameras, you know, film cameras as a kid and stuff. I took one semester of photography, I think it was 98, and I loved it. But when I moved to Vermont, I didn't have a darkroom or anything like that. And I guess I could have, but I kind of got interested in other things. And then while I was in seminary, I always joke, I started seminary single with no kids and graduated married with four kids. so, you know, starting a family and stuff, we got a Fuji point and shoot camera. The first digital camera I ever got. And I really wanted a digital camera, and I'd asked my parents and they said, sure. And got me, they gave me their old, really crappy, horrible camera, which was a hand-me-down that they didn't want anymore. So then when we got this Fuji, I kind of went nuts with it and was doing a lot of macro photography and some landscape stuff. And then I got an offer to have an exhibit at a coffee shop. And when I realized how much it was going to cost me to print and frame everything, having a young family and just starting out and not having any money, I was like, meh, this just isn't going to happen. And so I walked away from it. And then what was it, like 2 years ago, I guess, in my professional life, the past 4 years have been really difficult, just because of the divisiveness and the political climate in the country. I mean, this was pre-COVID, but social media and everything became really negative to me. And a few things kind of happened at once. One was, with that going on, I was thinking, I wish I could find a way to look at the world differently and show people a different side of the world to kind of remind them. I started getting really close with a friend of mine, Chris Rhodes, who is a tattooer by trade, but also is a brilliant photographer. And looking at his work. And then I was in Erie with my parents and my kids at the zoo, and I took a picture of a rhinoceros on my phone. And I looked at it and I thought, hey, that's not a bad photograph. Imagine what I could do if I had a real camera. And then those pieces kind of converged together, where I was like, this is a way I could literally look at the world differently. And I could show people, literally, the beauty that I see in the world. And so from there, I begged, borrowed, and stole. And I didn't really steal.
I was gonna clarify that, but I'm glad that you did.
And I bought a Nikon D5600 with the two kit lenses. And that's how I got started. And actually, my son now has that camera and uses it all the time.
So, you know, one of the things that I find interesting for when talking with photographers is that there always seems to be some interest in photography, you know, kind of lifelong, but it's just how much commitment was made kind of varies, I suppose. Some make a commitment pretty young, some do it later in life, but there's always some sort of artistic vision or ability to see the potential of a camera. Do you think, you know, because you were saying that, you know, you've seen all these photos from your grandparents and then you've been given disposable cameras, but why do you think that it wasn't until you saw your photo of that rhinoceros that something clicked and you said, oh yeah, photography, I can do this?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was a perfect storm of, I mean, I've always been into art and always liked artistic expression, and I like drawing, but I never really felt like I had a talent for it or anything. I don't, it was like just, I think it was just the perfect storm of being frustrated with the perspective of the world that I was being shown on things like social media, and realizing that I'm living in a very contentious time. Having a friend of mine who was into photography and an amazing artist who really was encouraging, and then I don't, it's funny, people ask me how I became a minister, like, well, what's my call story? And I think they're expecting like a Moses burning bush story, and I don't have one. It was just kind of like a series of gentle nudges, but this was probably the closest to like a burning bush moment that I've had. Mm-hmm. Where it was like, I remember distinctly at the zoo looking at that photo on my phone and being like, oh my God, this is how we're gonna do it. And it just was like, you know, I never looked back. And it was funny, I remember I sent my first photos that I took from that camera to my friend Chris, the photographer. And I said, what do you think of these? I was super excited about them. And he was like, yeah, it looks like somebody who just got a camera and is really excited to have a camera. And I was like, you don't know what you're talking about. And then I looked at them and I was like, oh, holy crap, he's right. You know, yeah. Especially looking back, I'm like, yeah, I see what he was saying.
So then let me ask you, what was it about those photos now that you've been shooting for like 2 years with intention? If you look back at that rhino photo or going to the zoo, what was it about those photos that didn't make them stand out to, I guess, where they would today?
Well, I think the rhino photo actually holds up.
Oh, it still does. That's good.
Yeah. It's actually fairly good for a zoo picture from a phone, like above the rhino. Like, it actually worked out pretty well. The other one's just, there was no sense of composition. It was, you know, one of the things, I'm really lucky because Chris is one of those people where he wanted to see me get better. And so he will be brutally honest with me about my photography, which I think is really necessary, because everybody else is just kind of impressed that you can make a picture appear on the screen. And one of the things he's really big at is, what is your subject? And saying, you know, what am I supposed to be looking at here? Mm. And so like, there was that, there was exposure issues. I mean, I was shooting on fully auto. I had no idea what I was doing. And so, you know, I think they were kind of over editing, you know, the saturation is pumped to the T, you know, to make, oh, look how bright and vibrant I can make these. You get enamored with that stuff. And it's funny, I see people posting online now making those similar mistakes, and I know right where you are. I used to do the same thing.
So then what was it that, after you'd taken those photos, after you did some editing, you went through that vibrance and saturation phase, like, how'd you get out of that? Because if everybody goes through it, what makes you decide to change?
Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
I'm a few things. One, that the very short, simple answer is I wanted Chris to say, that's a good photo. Because I knew if he said that, he meant it and it was real, right? So a lot of it was working towards trying to get him to be not impressed, but at least like, hey, good job. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The other thing is
validation.
Yeah. You know, and so I tried to listen to his advice. And then the other thing is like, if I get an interest into something and this drives my wife nuts, like, I don't stick my toes in the water. It's like a full-on dive-in-the-pool obsession with me. And so that began a huge process of research, watching a lot of YouTube videos about how to do photography. That's one of the things that annoys me about YouTube is a lot of its equipment reviews.
Yeah.
They kind of like encourage you to like, this is the way your photography is going to get better if you buy this camera and blah, blah, blah. And luckily I had somebody like Chris being like, that's bull crap. And I didn't believe him until I started buying things I didn't need. And then I was like, why isn't mine? He's like, cause it's not the equipment, idiot. So like that research, buying books, looking online, it was in that kind of first little period that I discovered your podcast, which was hugely helpful because you, one of the things you do, Raymond, that I so appreciate is that you're filling a niche that I don't think other photography podcasts do. I mean, it's really neat for me to hear about famous photographers and their process and their influence and what they're doing and stuff like that. But yours was more kind of, you know, kind of like one of those 1950s. So you bought a camera. Now what do you, you know what I mean? Like, so having something like your podcast that really, really would walk me through the process and kind of figure out how people were doing things. And that just became huge for me. And so I just became a research nut. And I can tell photography, I knew photography was going to be different. Because usually I get like a passion hobby for about a year, and then I burn out and fizzle out on it or move on to the next thing. But I'm probably read and study more about photography even more now than I did when I first began.
That's awesome. So it obviously continues. And thank you so much for saying those super kind words. But I think what's important here is that like it's not, you know, you have to kind of take control of what it is that you find interesting, you know? So I find oftentimes I listen and read to a lot of books, either on Audible or, you know, on my Kindle. And there's plenty of times where I can read something and say, wow, I get it. But putting it into practice or actually, you know, taking action on those things is an entirely different thing. So while there's a ton of information out there, you actually did it. And that's what makes it different. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't do any of this. It's you. You're the one who found it. And then you're the one who took action on it. So I think that, you know, that kind of needs to be turned around and put back on you because after, and I think that speaks to you having been in photography now going on more than a year. It's no longer just like a passion thing. Like, this is becoming part of your life. But I want to go back to what you said a little bit earlier, talking about the gear, which was, you know, you said that gear doesn't really matter that much. But in this 2-year span, you started with the D5600 on Nikon, and then you went to the Canon R5, right?
No. So it's interesting. So I went from the gear doesn't matter, but let me tell you why my gear is really good.
Right.
That I have.
Yeah.
So let's be clear, because gear in some cases really does matter. And I found that out when I bought the R5 that, gear has a purpose, right? So I went from the Nikon 5600 to, I was looking for a lens for it, for a 70 to 200 lens. And I bought one, but I didn't realize that with Nikon, you've got some cameras that have the focus motor in the body and some that have it in the lens. Mm. And the 5600 doesn't have it in the body, so you need it in the lens. But the older Nikon lenses don't have the motors. So I bought this lens and it didn't work on my camera. And so I messaged the guy who I bought it from and he said, I'll sell you my old 7500 or 750. And I was like, all right. I mean, it was like dirt cheap. And so I picked that up and I loved the color profile on that, but the autofocus on it sucked.
So,
but it's like, I mean, it's a 12 megapixel super old camera. From there, I went to the Canon M6 Mark II to switch into mirrorless. And that was revolutionary to me. And then I got a grant to make a portrait book of, I don't know how to say it politely, older people of faith, essentially.
Okay.
So from that, I used the grant money to buy a Canon RP because I wanted to get into the RF lenses.
Yeah.
And then that was like a holder until I got the R5. And so I bought the R5, and that's been revolution. I mean, the autofocus on that is amazing. I mean, that thing finds an eye and it locks in. And I absolutely adore my R5, but I really, 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 really loved my M6 Mark II. It was small. It's 35 megapixels, or 32 or 35. So you can blow things up to the size of posters. You know, you can get an adapter for the EF lenses. Some people don't like adapters. I don't really care either way. And I love that camera. And then my younger son got into photography, so I gave him my 5600. I loaned out my 750 to somebody. And then my older son started really getting into photography, and he really liked the M6 Mark II. So I went from having like a nice range of cameras to suddenly no cameras except for the R5. And then when my son took the M6 Mark II, I'd always been fascinated by Fuji because I really like their color profiles. I really like that kind of classic photography look.
Yeah.
And so then I picked up the XC4 as kind of my everyday shooter, that because R5 is huge and I've got a battery pack on it and the lenses are big. And so like for just like, hey, I'm going out and I'm going to take my camera just in case.
You stand out.
Yeah. And like, especially on the street, I've been doing a lot of street photography or photography, documentary style photography. And it's heavy. It people notice it. You know, then they think, what is this guy doing? The lenses, even if they're not like long range zoom lenses, they look like they're, you know, telephoto lenses. So then people are like, why are you taking? Where with the Fuji, I run around and people are like, oh, look at this tourist, and have no idea I'm taking their picture. Or they don't care because they don't think I know what I'm doing, which, because I'm still trying to figure out the difference in the Fuji versus the Canon, I don't know what I'm doing. So yeah, it works out well. And I love it. I absolutely love it because, I mean, I've even started doing this thing where I'm taking pictures out my car window as I'm driving because it's so easy to manage and small to hold. And like, on rainy days especially, it's just a lot of fun. It's the R5 is great. I love it. I love the pictures it produces. It's a very professional camera, and I love using it for like when I need to like do something professional like. But the Fuji camera, that XE4, has just brought such joy into my life. Like, it's just fun to shoot with and not care, and I think I don't feel the pressure of it where I do like the R5. Like, it feels like my professional camera, so I feel like I really need to be like really serious with it, where the Fuji is just like, let's go and have fun.
Do you find that you're harder on yourself if you don't get a I don't know, for lack of a better term, great image out of the R5 because it's a more professional camera versus the Fuji?
I'm extremely brutal on myself regardless. I think I'm that way with like sermons and things like that, with work I produce. Like, I'm one of my harshest critics, but I wouldn't say if I go out and shoot and I don't get anything on either one of those cameras, I just chalk it up to today was a practice session. What did we learn today? And that helps. So I don't really like, I get mad if I blow focus on the R5, though, because I know that's totally my fault. Where the Fuji, I'm still trying to figure out their focus system, so
yeah,
not as concerned. But yeah, that would be the one thing. If I blow focus on the R5, that's when I get frustrated with myself.
Talk to me about, you know, you went from the 5600 to the 750, and then you kind of stayed in that full frame range there for a while. Was that a big upgrade for you to go from the 5600 to, you know, to then the R5, but then also go kind of back down to a crop sensor with a Fuji?
The M6 Mark II also is a crop sensor. And so I find that both of them are, I know some people poo-poo crop sensors, but I find that crop sensor and full frame, they serve two different purposes. And so I kind of view it as like having a flathead and a Phillips head screwdriver. You know, not that you can't do certain things with the crop sensor. I mean, you can kind of fake it, but like, so I wouldn't take the crop sensor out to shoot at night. I'm definitely going to take a full frame camera to do that. But I like the crop sensor, to be honest with you. I think it's pretty fun.
So you weren't worried you weren't worried at all picking up the Fuji after having this, you know, Cadillac of full frame cameras being the R5?
No, because I really think that Fuji is the Cadillac of crop sensors, right? And I knew I was getting the Fuji for specific reasons. Their color profile, I wanted a smaller mirrorless, so I knew that that was automatically going to lead me into a crop sensor. I was trying to replace my M6 Mark II, which was a crop sensor, which I really enjoyed. And, you know, with the XE4, it's a reasonably priced camera. Reasonably priced as cameras come these days, and yet it's the same sensor in electronics that's in, you know, the X Pro 3.
Yeah,
right. So I figured, let's give it a go. If I don't feel an obligation or a desire to upgrade to the X Pro 3, but you know, like when this camera goes or it's time to move on from this one, I mean, that's probably, you know, the X Pro line will probably be the next step up I look at. But I really, no, I felt like the Fuji was a much better choice for me than going for a Canon crop sensor, to be honest with you, or anybody else. So I felt really good about that decision.
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
What about before you had used a full frame sensor? When you went from the 5600 to the 750, were you just like elated? Were you like so excited to give it a try? Or was it also just like, oh, here's just another camera, let's figure this out?
Well, it's interesting. So the 5600 is, I don't understand necessarily the megapixel stuff. But so that had like, what, 24 megapixels. The full frame 750 has 12 or something. Mm-hmm. So it was a step down in that way, but the lower light performance and the way that thing, especially on portraits, was capturing skin tones and colors, I was just completely enamored with. That, and it looks like a big professional camera, and I was kind of like, it made me feel like I was important, you know?
Yeah, that's important when you're trying to, I guess the question that I'm trying to get at here is, do you ever deal with any sort of imposter syndrome when behind the camera?
Every time I'm behind the camera.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Except I think maybe that's why it's so fun with the Fuji, because I don't feel that way with it. Maybe because it's a smaller camera and I don't think people's perception of what a photographer is, besides somebody who takes photographs, is like they've got the big fancy camera that, you know, you can make billboards out of and blah, 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 blah. But I don't feel that with the Fuji. But yeah, anytime anybody asks me, anytime I've been commissioned to do something or a piece of work, I always feel like, or be asked to be on a podcast, I'm always like, why do they want to talk to me? Or why, Don't they know that there's somebody out there who could like actually do a good job on this, you know?
I'm just trying to get enough stuff to hopefully embarrass you in the future. That's what I'm trying to do here.
I will do that myself. Trust me.
That's funny. So let's, I want to know, you know, you mentioned finding the podcast early on. How did you come to find the community?
I think you mentioned it in one of the podcasts, or I had searched it up on Facebook and found, I know I found the page for the podcast first and liked that. And then it was either through that or one of the podcast episodes where you mentioned the community that I found the community through that. And that's been super helpful. You know, one of the great things about, and I think it's a testament to you, the environment in that community is so positive and so affirming. And yet people will give you honest feedback, you know, and I think that's super huge. There's only one other group I found that's a street photography group out of England. So most of these guys are British. So even when they're being super mean about your photos, it still sounds funny. but it was a place where people wouldn't just like tear you down and say, no, that's crap, but give you honest feedback and tell you what you could do better and really encourage you to try and get better if that's what you're shooting for. And so I just, the Beginners Photography Podcast group on Facebook, I think is one of the most positive, affirming and group where you can really just learn a lot from people if you pay attention and you're open to it.
I agree. Had you been in any other groups and had a negative experience that turned you off to groups?
Oh gosh, yeah. It's funny, Jim Sinicki and I, we will Facebook message each other back and forth about groups that we belong to that I haven't really left, that I won't post in because it's brutal. Like mm-hmm. One group, any photo I try and post, they reject it for some reason, like won't even post it. What? And actually I think Jim was just kicked out of that group. So we have back and forth laughs about it. But
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean,
what's the point of that?
Like somebody will post something and people will just be like, that's absolute garbage. And they won't even like tell them why they think that, right? Or like give them good feedback. Or the person who, you know, they'll ask for constructive criticism and then they spend all their time defending it. Well, I intentionally did that. Well, okay, but it looks like, you know, it's like, dude, don't ask for it. If you want us to say it's awesome, just post it and say, doesn't this look awesome?
Right. You know,
that's one thing. Like my friend Chris and I have this thing where if I send him a photo and I say, what do you think? I want to know what he thinks. If mm-hmm. I say, doesn't this look cool? I just want him to be like, yeah, that's awesome. You know, I just want the praise. But yeah. Oh, I mean, gosh, some of the other groups on Facebook, and I won't name them by name, but it can just be brutal where I've seen people basically want to sell their camera after they post a photo.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's horrible. That is so horrible. Are you the kind of person, like, would that same thing, if it were to happen to you, make you want to give up? Or I guess, what would keep you going?
See, I don't know. It's weird for me. Like, one of the things I decided, I guess kind of recently, is that photography is like the one thing I do for myself, that I'm doing it because it means something for me and because I'm passionate about. And so I don't want to say I don't care about what other people think about it, because I do very much. But that kind of negative feedback and criticism, when I try and consider the source, And I don't let it deter me, because it's not about them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And especially like if you look at like one of the people I'm still trying to figure out is William Eggleston. And in fact, I was just at the Art Institute and saw one of his actual prints, which I liked a lot more than I thought I was going to. I mean, people are brutal about sure. photography, and very, very torn. I mean, very divisive on whether or not it's good. and he just keeps doing what he does. And so I kind of realized that if you're chasing your passion, it's not going to be for everyone. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's about photography is an art form to me, and it's about that art, and it's about the creative expression of art. And so I want to get better at it to better express myself, better understand myself through photography. But because of that, then I'm not so concerned about like booking clients or selling prints or being well regarded or popular as a photographer, because I made a very conscious decision that that's not what I'm doing it for. And so in one way, I'm lucky because I can be very selective about, if somebody wants to commission me, I can be very selective about what work I'll take and what I won't, because I'm not relying on it for an income and not expecting it to make money for me. And so that pressure, I think, has really been relieved off of me. And so I don't worry about people being brutalized into my photos. And I try and take, if there is something in there that's helpful, I try and take that and say, oh, okay, I see where they're coming from. And then just leaving the rest of the garbage at home.
Right. And luckily there's not too much garbage in the group though, right? In the beginner photography podcast community.
No, I found like I'll post photographs in that group and say, what do you think, when I'm really on the fence about it? And I find the feedback to be exactly what constructive criticism is supposed to be, you know, where they find the good things, they point out the bad things, or say, this is my opinion on this. What if you did this? And I find a lot of times it's extremely helpful advice, or, you know, somebody will offer a different way of cropping it, or what if you looked at this in black and white? And usually I've found the advice to be very good and very affirming, which is, that's the kind of environment I want to be in.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think that we really have something special here. And, you know, I attribute it like to you, because I'm not in every conversation. It's you and it's the other members of the community who are. And, you know, y'all could just be jerks to each other if you wanted to, but you don't. And I love it. And that's why I think it's magical. So when it comes to photography, though, you know, you said that you don't really do it for others. You just do it for yourself. But we're always on this path of like learning and becoming better. So what is it that inspires you from the photographic standpoint? Where do you get your inspiration from for the photos that you take?
Wow, that's a great question. One of the things I've noticed about, like, if there's a theme throughout my life, is that, we could really unpack this and turn this into the beginner's photography psychology podcast. I'm adopted, but I also have a family name, right? So I'm named after my great-grandfather, which is why I have a weird name like Quincy, which also is funny. On a side note, my wife's name is Beverly. So when people hear the Reverend Quincy and Beverly Worthington are like showing up someplace, they expect us to be like in our 80s and me to have a tweed jacket on and her to be wearing her pearls. And then I show up covered in tattoos and like in a flannel and jeans. They're like, what?
Where's the top hat? Where's the
right, right. So I'm both blessed and cursed with a family name. But like being adopted, I've always wondered, like, there's always a sense of, I just recently am connecting with biological family. And that's a whole, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on that.
Oh my gosh.
I won't. But everything I've done, I think, is the common theme, to get back to that, is been trying to understand who I am. And I think with photography, ultimately, that's the same drive, whether it's trying to understand other people and thereby understanding myself, understanding my context and place. Both of my kids, or both of my boys who are into photography now, are on the autism spectrum, both extremely high functioning, but they look at the world differently than I do. And so photography, looking at their pictures, has helped me see how they're viewing the world. Mm-hmm. And then I've started kind of trying to look at my own photography and saying, every time you pick up the camera, every time you press that shutter button, you're making conscious decisions to do that, right? Especially if you're shooting in manual or aperture priority, depending on the situation, maybe even when you're shooting in full auto, although it's been a while since I've done that. I mean, you're making a conscious decision on what you're taking a photo of. And I don't always understand why I lift my camera to take a picture of something. And so one of the things I've been trying to do is go back and look at my photographs and say, what was it about this moment mm-hmm. that made me want to capture it? That made me take the time and the intentionality to capture this moment? What was it that speaks to me here? And that then leads me really into a sense of self-reflection and trying to understand how I view the world or what I think is important or what speaks to me or where I find beauty or how I find beauty. And so I'm really trying to use that to drive my entire photographic process.
Wow. So going back and looking at some of your earliest photos and trying to find that element, I suppose, that drew you to taking that photo, how have your photos changed since then over the years?
I think they're less and less becoming about taking a photograph of something because I think it's pretty, and more because there's something about it that speaks to me, even if I don't know what it is that's speaking to me in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that then, that, and it's less about, when I first started, and I don't think it's a bad idea to do it, and I'm glad I did, but trying to take photos that I think other people will like or will garner likes or follows on my Instagram page or whatever, to then saying, what is it about this photograph that I like? You know, and I guess that's more what I mean about, like, I do it more for me than other people. I've decided that I want to take photographs that I find meaning in, that speak to me. And I think that's why in the few cases I've done, like a family shoot or I did a wedding, and in neither one of those I was really passionate about it because I felt like I was trying to do too much to, like, give them what they want.
Yeah.
And not use my own voice and style through it. And so it was interesting. A friend of mine approached me and said, I want you to photograph my wedding. It was only the second wedding I shot. I said, I told him, I said, if I do this, I want to do this my way. And I want to shoot it and edit it the way I feel right. But know then that you're not going to get a traditional wedding photography session. And he said, that's exactly what I want. And so that's where I think when we have a vision as a photographer or an artist of where we want our work to go, and we find a client then that has a want or need for a service that meshes with our vision, I think that's where the magic really happens. And so those, I decided, are going to be the projects I really look for rather than any. Which is actually something that I find really inspiring about your photography, Raymond. I know this isn't supposed to be a podcast about you, but one of the things I always get blown away by following you on Instagram and some of your Facebook posts with your weddings is that you bring a very distinct and natural style to it, to where it really, really, it's an artistic expression. And yet you're doing, quote unquote, more traditional wedding photography, but you're able to marry those two together. And I don't think you find that in a lot of, like, quote unquote, wedding photographers. You know, a lot of wedding photography I find boring. Not that I look at a lot of wedding photography, because that seems kind of weird to, like, I'm going to check out this random person's wedding. But it all looks the same. It all looks cliche. It all has the same kind of, like, this is what a wedding photograph is supposed to look like, you know. where I think yours, you're really melding the two well together.
I don't know. I guess I don't know how that really came about. You know, I suppose part of it is probably part of the path that you took, you know, from a very early, having gone to film school, I was always told, you know, like, as a cinematographer, you're in control of the look of how
I started off in film school. That's what I originally went to
college. Oh, wow.
Anyways.
So then, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, you have to create something that comes from within you, very rarely from that film background are you told, like, this is how things need to go. Like, maybe there's some of that, like, in storytelling, like in script writing, as far as like act and structure and whatnot. But aside from that, everybody's kind of given free rein to figure out what it is that they want to say. And I think films have such a different, like, you know, you look at, I don't know, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, shot by Roger Deakins. And then you look at, you know, Shawshank Redemption, also shot by Roger Deakins. And they have two completely different looks, you know, but it's still the same person. Whereas in photography, people are kind of praised for having a consistent look throughout all of their images. Whereas in film, you almost don't want that, you know? So I think I probably had the same, you know, journey as you did, where it was just like, I don't want to do the, you know, 3-hour portrait session in front of a large oak tree. Like, I just kind of want to figure it out on my own and see how this goes. And then it just kind of developed from there. But I appreciate you saying that. I guess I've never really put that into words, but I guess that's kind of what I'm going for. Right. So yeah. I appreciate your eye there and pointing that out for me. Thank you. Let me ask you a question. If you would have, for that second wedding where you're like, okay, I'll do it, but like, this is going to be, I'm going to shoot it the way that I want to. If you showed up on the wedding day and say, you know, either the bride or the groom handed you this list of photos that they wanted, what would you have done at that point?
Because it was a close friend of mine, I probably would have laughed at him. I mean, I did ask him, like, who do you want photographs of? Who are the important people here? You know what I'm saying? And he was less than helpful on that. So that was great. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to put him in a lurch, you know, and say, well, this isn't... I don't know. I mean, that's one reason why I'm really finding it necessary to develop a contract and not just do things on a gentleman's agreement.
Sure.
Be nice, because people try and take advantage of that. And I think that would be one of the ways. And so I think I'm going to make it, you know, very clear that this is what I'm doing and that's what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. But I'm a nice guy and I don't like being mean. So I'd probably try and, I don't know, I'd probably try and find a middle ground, if not.
Would you continue to try to pursue it, or would that turn you off enough to say, you know what, I'm going to try something else, to shoot something else?
You mean like as far as wedding photography goes?
Or? Yeah. I guess, yeah. Do you want to continue shooting weddings? And like, I guess I'm trying to figure out, would that, if you were to show up and you were given just a list of photos, like, these are our must-have photos, would you dread it so much, would that suck all of the fun out of it for you to never want to do it again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But like, I think hopefully, you know, kind of through the vetting process of meeting with people and talking beforehand, that a lot of that stuff would come out.
Yeah.
And I think even on my website, I say, you know, like, if I decide that we're not going to be a good fit for what you want, I will try and help you find somebody I think might work for you. And I think a lot of that, it comes to like being just very clear and upfront at the beginning of the process of, this is what I do and this is what I want to do. And if I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And I don't want to waste your time. Like with something like wedding photography, I don't want somebody to be bummed out by their wedding photos. So if I don't think I'm going to be able to do a good job, I want them to be able to have a good job. And to be honest with you, because I don't quote unquote need the money, like, I'm much more concerned with that than I am like the paycheck. Right. So I think some of that's just being honest with people about what you want to do and what you don't want to do.
Yeah, and that's a hard thing for a lot of people. A lot of people want to get into it for the business side of it. And I think, you know, that this avenue that you're taking is probably going to hopefully, you know, let photography last longer for you and not get as burnt out by doing something that you don't want to do for, you know, chasing the paycheck or something. I love that. So what's next for you?
Like today or?
Yeah, no, immediately following this. No. Like, you know, you've been shooting, I would say, with intention for almost 2 years now. You know, you've learned quite a bit up until this point. What comes next for you?
You know, yeah, I think right now I have a vision of where I want my photos to be kind of stylistically and content wise. And so I'm trying to spend a lot of time developing that. I've fallen in love with documentary style photography, much more so than like post photography and things like that. And I think when I first started, I was all over the board trying as many different things as I could and as many different quote unquote styles as I could, which I highly recommend. I think you should shoot at everything and everything and then find out what you like and don't like and begin to kind of specialize as you go along, but you're never going to know what you like until you try it. And not saying that's not going to change, and I think it should, right? Like, so I look at somebody like Joel Meyerowitz, who started off as a street photographer in New York, and now he's during quarantine, he started doing these self-portraits and still life photography. That's just mind-blowingly good and such a departure from his work. And so every 8 to 10 years, it seems like the guy is reinventing himself and trying something new in photography, which I think is how you keep it interesting. But right now I found like I really want to capture modern looks, but with the kind of nostalgic feel of classic film look without having to shoot film, because it's been over 20 years since I've been in a darkroom and I don't know what I'm doing. And I like shooting color anyways, so that wouldn't be possible. And I'm not a patient person, so sending out film and waiting for it to come back to see if I got anything good doesn't work. But I want to have my photographs have a very classic feel while still saying something about the world we live in now. And so I want them to have kind of a feeling of nostalgia with a little bit of innovation thrown in. And so I think right now, for the foreseeable future, that's kind of what I'm working on developing and refining is the style I'm kind of going for and trying to hit. And your advice with the Fujifilm Kodachrome recipe was huge.
You like it, huh?
Yeah, I really
do. There's a lot of real fun flexibility that, you know, Fuji camera has. Have you been able to check out any of the other recipes from, I think it's FujiRecipes.com?
No. I've been so stuck and glued to this Kodachrome one, you know, because I really like that, like, you see the Leicas getting this a lot, and Fuji is real close to that Leica look with the real creamy kind of pastel colors.
Yeah.
And Fuji is about a tenth of the cost of a Leica. So, yeah, I've been really stuck on kind of that one recipe and trying to get that look down. And then I'll probably branch out a little bit more. What I have to figure out is, like, how to save that profile that I have right now.
Oh, I'll send you an article. That's what I do. I found, you know, when I went through the Fuji Recipes website, obviously a lot of the profiles are emulated after film, but then some of them aren't so much. But yeah, different ones that I found interesting, you can save them within the queue menu, but I'll send you that information afterwards. But that's one of my favorites. I have one that just kind of based off classic chrome, which is great, that I love. And then another one that I found on that website, which is like, it's, I think it's called like Ilford 3200 pushed or something, and It is just so grainy and it looks horrible, you know, like you, like there's no way that you could put a loop up to this thing and like really zoom in and look at these photos, but taken back, you know, and like just printed even to like an 8x10, and you have like this nice little white border around it. It just reminds me so much of the black and white film that I used to shoot, you know, when I was in film school. And it just, it has that texture to it and that quality that honestly, you know, when I was shooting Canon, I wanted to shoot everything as flat as possible so that I'd have as much range to be able to edit, you know, in Lightroom after the fact. And now I've gotten to this point to where, you know, they've built in so many tools within the Fuji ecosystem that it's like, why not just do that in camera, you know, and then you save a step in the edit. So even though it doesn't look crisp and clean, it has this texture to it that I love so much. And I'm going to send that to you. I'm going to write that down right here. You know, to make sure that you get that.
It's funny, like I used to get really obsessed with like making sure it was a technically good photo.
Right. You
know, like to the point where it was like, oh gosh, I just lost the word. You know, it was a technical application. It was, you know, and then I started looking at like things like Robert Frank's The Americans, or, you know, Cartier-Bresson's work, or Bruce Gilden, who I don't think you should emulate as a person at all, and maybe not shoot photography like he does, because I think it's amazing that guy hasn't been punched 5 million times. But
his who work, says that he hasn't, but yeah.
Yeah, his work is so powerful, right?
Yeah.
But these are not technical photographers, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so like now that I feel like I'm getting down like the exposure triangle and how to technically take a good photograph, like moving away from that and saying that's not what's going to be important to me, you know, it's not going to be a skill set, it's going to be an artistic expression. And that's a very different way of shooting, and so that's been really liberating to me too. And so like not worrying about like, well, if I have to push my ISO to get the shot and there's grain in it, well, our film professor in college, we would light a scene and then somebody would be complaining there was a shadow in it where it shouldn't be, and he'd look at us and be like, there's shadows in real life, baby, just go with it, you know. So like thinking about stuff like that. You're exclusively in to Fuji's now, right? I mean, that's,
yeah.
So do you find limitations? Like I found with the last wedding I shot, it was hard to use the Fuji or even the RP. Not so much the R5, but with the lighting being insane. Hmm. Do you find with a crop sensor that you end up having to push your ISO or limitations with that due to lighting? Or
Lighting being insane as in different colors or just low or what?
Low and like hot spots and cool spots because of where the lights are fixed and
right. So there's kind of two ways that I go about it. One is that I have found that with Fuji, and this is not a bad thing, but it's forced me to slow down in the photos that I take, mainly because when I started with the X-T1, I went from a 5D Mark III to an X-T1, which was just like miles behind the 5D Mark III when it came to autofocus. Yeah. So what that taught me was that I have to pre-visualize the shot, get set up so that when it happens, I'm good to go and I'm ready. So there's a lot more pre-visualization. So now that quality has kind of came to where I'm at today. So now when I'm at a wedding, if it's in low light and I see, you know, can lights or whatever, and there's these hot spots, I will kind of camp out because I know that there's some good light here. And then when something happens in front of it, I'll capture it and I'm fine. As far as ISO goes, I don't worry about it at all. Literally at all. I mean, I have no problem going up to, you know, I mean, 6400, like any day of the week, I have no problem doing that whatsoever. You know, when it comes to wedding photos, you know that couples are going to love their wedding photos regardless, you know. And I'm not saying that that means that photos don't have to have some sense of technical abilities in them. But I'd much rather get a shot and have it be grainy than try to get a technically perfect photo and have the shutter speed just be so slow that you can't even see what's going on. You know what I mean? I'll take a grainy, you know, mouth wide open laugh any day of the week over a, you know, blurry, you know, first dance photo. So there's that. And then the other thing is that I use a lot of off-camera flash. So a lot of it is that I'm kind of in control of the light that I create and that gets put out. Now, the only limitation with that is that with, you know, if you're shooting with a DSLR and you look through the viewfinder, it's a mirror. You see out through the lens. And therefore, it's typically brighter. You can see a lot of things. Whereas with a mirrorless camera, if you're shooting, you see directly whatever the sensor sees, you know? So if you're shooting with a flash, your settings are going to be so to where everything that you're looking at is dark. It's just a black frame, and that can be difficult. So shooting with the X-Pro 2, which is what I shoot all my weddings on, I can just use the optical viewfinder. That's an option for me, not so much for you, or, you know, anybody shooting with an X-T anything, 3, 4, you know, whatever. And then I found a way around it there. But I mean, these are just things that you just, like, you have to do it, you know, like you're at a wedding, you have to figure it out. And then you just kind of make do with whatever it is that you got. But I'd love to hear, you know, from your perspective, did you obviously found it much more difficult than the Canon, right?
Yeah. I will say on a side note, like that's the one thing I wish that I had on the XE4 is that hybrid rangefinder, because that's super cool.
It's great, yeah.
Which is why I think like the next time, when it's time to upgrade, that's what I'm going to go for, is something like that. But yeah, I don't know what it is about it. I mean, I generally try and use as a natural light as I can. I'm not big in the flash. And then specifically for this wedding, like they would not have been thrilled with flashes going off during everything. Yeah, it was a little tricky. I figured it out and did all right, but I noticed, and it might just be the difference with the crop sensor to full frame, that, you know, there was definitely a lot more noise introduced into the photo.
Sure.
I give wedding photographers all the credit for is, like, that really is, you have to be good at so many different styles of photography that it's ridiculous. Portrait, street style photography, product photography, macro, you know, like all of that comes into play. I mean, that really is, if you're doing weddings on a regular basis, you're going to become a very, very well-rounded photographer.
And that's why you have to, you know, take the advice that you had, which is just shoot everything in the beginning before you decide to get into one thing, because it's all going to come together in a culmination to, you know, to make you a better photographer from a technical standpoint and have more abilities, you know, for if you find yourself in that situation. So I think you're taking the right steps there. You're taking the right steps. So I want to go back to the beginning of this year. Beginning of this year, you posted that you had one goal for this year. How's that going?
Well, you know, this is a clear step towards that goal. So, you know, now we've met face to face. So, you know, I'm not like a weirdo stalker, from the best you can tell. And yeah. So, you know, I'm hoping, I leave Wednesday to go to Disney World for my daughter's cheer competition. And then I get back the following Wednesday, and I'm hoping from then to, you know, hit that goal before July.
You're going to come down to Indy at some point?
I'm going to come down to Indy. I'm hoping to grab Jim with me. Mm-hmm. Maybe see if Kimberly wants to come and, you know, go visit our Graceland, essentially.
That's so weird. Indy's got a lot of fun places. We'll have a good time. We'll have a good time. Quincy, aside from the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community, is there anywhere else where we can find you online?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at MyPhotoJourneyBegins, and I have a website that I'm, another goal of mine this year is to keep my website current and updated and really work on it. So I just totally revamped that. And so those are probably the two best places to check me out. Yeah.
Awesome. Before I let you go, is there anything that maybe I didn't ask you today that you just want to make sure that new photographers know about getting started in photography?
I find your passion and find what excites you and chase it. And as important as feedback and critique is, I think you need to be careful where you take that from and don't let people discourage or deter you from what you're trying to do, right? And there's always ways to make things better, right? So realize that you're never gonna feel, I mean, even like listening to interviews of Joel Meyerowitz, who's like in every major gallery in the world, and you know, he's still finding areas he can grow and feels like an imposter sometimes. So don't worry about that, because you're probably gonna feel like that your whole life, but find what you're passionate about and chase it, and don't let people deter you from that. Find people who will encourage you but also push you to grow. I think that's the number one thing with almost anything in life, but you know, specifically with photography. And then let that inform and influence who you are, how you understand yourself, and how you understand the world and your relationship to the world, right? I mean, I think that's really the search that every artist and every photographer is on, regardless of if you shoot in a studio, to if you're out in the streets, to if you're a nature photographer, to you only like taking photos of your kids, you know?
Well, Quincy, I don't think that I could have said it any better myself. That was fantastic there. And I know that, you know, listeners are going to get a lot out of that. So thank you so much. You know, thank you for coming on today, sharing everything that you did. And I look forward to keeping up with you and continuing to do so within the Facebook group as well. So again, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been quite an honor.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, you would think wedding photographers would want to establish relationships with local clergy, because I get asked a lot, like, who would you recommend? Do you have any idea of wedding photographers? And obviously now I have a little bit more of an idea, but like, if you let me know beforehand, hey, I want to do this, I'll say like, here's a time in the service where it would work perfectly. You know what I'm saying? And like, totally let you take that shot. You know, I mean, that's the case. And granted, I'm a lot more relaxed than maybe a lot of clergy, but like, just communication is key, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's it. You just get, and experience. Like, the more you do it, you know, the more you just figure it out. And you're like,
my favorite was a video I saw. It must have been in a Catholic church, because it's a huge baptismal like pool in the back of the church. Mm-hmm. And the photographer is following the couple down the aisle.
Oh,
click,
no.
Click, 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 splat.
Oh, yep, right, yeah. Into it. That's why you have insurance. And that's why you have backup gear. And that's why you always bring another set of pants to every single wedding. I'll tell you that.